It's simple mathematics. Check it out. I revolve around science. What are we talking about here? That's Yassine Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def. Little assist to Erica Badu and Raekwon. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. Your Toronto Blue Jays win again last night. 5-3 against the Kansas City Royals. They get to Brady Singer, and as much as I wanted to do a bad Singer pun with that open, kept it statsy because Chris Black is with us. We're back to our weekly Tuesday segment with Chris Black. We've had a bunch of Jays Talk Pluses so far this year. We have not had one on a Tuesday yet. Chris Black, you know him as a producer at Sportsnet, at Down to Black on Twitter. Good morning, man. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am excellent. Fun game last night. So Jays win 5-3. You say, for anyone who missed it, you say, and if you missed it, it was probably because a certain other Toronto team, as you can see behind your head there, was playing. That was, a more dramatic game. The Jays, even though it was a close score, pretty stress-free, right? Yusei Kikuchi looked like he just cruised through five innings, little trouble in the sixth, bullpen mostly okay. But as far as baseball wins go, that one felt pretty comfortable.
He's been cruising all season long. And yeah, they've kind of followed that like early two-run, three-run home run and just ride the good starting pitching the rest of the way. So he's been really good. And yeah, it was a game that allowed for jumping between your two Sportsnet channels.
I would never do that. I would never have an eye on the 76ers and Knicks. Absolute mess at the end of that game. Either, if you were up late, shout out to Jamal Murray, 519, a clutch shot maker. We'll talk some clutch stuff today, as well as it pertains to certain Toronto Blue Jays. As far as simple mathematics go, Toronto Blue Jays now 10-1 on the season when they score five runs or more. It's that easy. I heard Blair and Barker joking about it yesterday on the pitching side when their pitchers allow four runs or fewer. I believe they're undefeated, so that stat would still hold. But yeah, simple mathematics. You score five-plus runs, you're going to win a lot of baseball games. Jays, it was a little surprised that they had done it 11 times already. Pretty straightforward. Yusei Kikuchi cruises through five, a little bit of trouble in the sixth. Bullpen picks him up from there. Swanson, again, dancing around a little bit of trouble. Jordan Romano gives up a monster home run to Kyle Isbell off the right field foul pole, but it doesn't really matter. It cuts the lead from 5-2 to 5-3. On the offensive side, Jays get to Brady Singer for five runs in six innings, three walks, five hits, and a Dalton Varsho home run. Takes a low and in slider that hung just a little bit, goes against the wind to right field for his sixth home run in the last nine games. No Blue Jay last year hit six home runs over any nine-game span. That is how hot Dalton Varsho is. So let's start there, Chris. Dalton Varsho is a guy we talked a lot about last year. Both of us liked him as a player, regardless of what you feel about the trade and the assets that went out in that decision. Like the player, like the defense, like the base running. The offense never really came around last year. I want to go back to spring training because, yes, he started the season cold and now he's hot. But even in spring training, I remember you tweeting out, you were seeing some good process side signs that Dalton Varsho had maybe refined his approach, especially in that problem area where pitchers had got him on the inner third of the plate. What do you remember seeing in spring training that kind of gave you optimism that, yeah, Dalton Varsho could be a better version of himself this year?
Really early on, we noticed that he had opened up his stance. And when you dove into the numbers last year, and it wasn't even something I necessarily picked up on as the season was unfolding, but it was when you kind of took a view from 10,000 feet, was he really struggled on the inner third, inner half, whatever you want to call it, inside corner. Everyone kind of talked about the high pitch being a problem for him, and it was a problem for him, but like this glaring issue was any pitch on the inner third and further in, he was, statistically speaking, like the worst lefty in baseball against those types of pitches. And what made it even stranger was that it wasn't a problem in the past for him. So it felt like opening up the stance was about the inside corner. And what made it really strange was he doesn't fit the profile of the type of hitter that would usually struggle with those pitches for two reasons. One, he's not like someone trying to poke the ball the other way. So it's not like they're trying to jam him inside. And the unofficial numbers would tell you that like his bat speed is as good as anyone on the team. So he should be able to turn on those. And the more you looked at last year, he was when he got an inside pitch, he'd jump all over them and he would yank them 100 feet foul. Like there was a bunch of examples of him like hitting a ball 320 feet, but it's 80 feet foul. So I think there were like, I think there were a bit of nerves last year, obviously, being the new guy. I think he was, and that's a type of pitch a lefty does damage with. And I think he would see this opportunity to do some damage and he would just jump at it a bit. And I even think that's what we were seeing early on in the season. He had a really good spring. He adjusted. He was getting hits on inside pitches. And then the season started and he was jumping again, jumping all over pitches again, being a little early. And then I even think there's been an adjustment in the last couple of weeks of what we've seen. And Joe Siddle and I have talked about this, where he's leaning back. If you look at kind of the side view of his swing, he's leaning back onto that back leg a little bit more. And I think that's just keeping him back, slowing him down a little bit. And now he's on time for these pitches and he's doing damage.
And those, like you said, those are the pitches you'd think a guy like Varsho does damage on, a guy who has shown 25, 27 home run power, a guy who, hey, sometimes the oversimplification of pull it in the air actually makes a lot of sense for, given his power to kind of right center field there. But yeah, you saw a lot of those, we'll call them Chris Black golf swings, you know, 275 feet straight, but 80 feet to the right, you know, he's slicing them a little bit. So this has been a good correction here, and he's not going to hit six home runs over every 9-game span, because that would make him the greatest power hitter of all time. But we are seeing a lot of, beyond just the home runs, a lot of the underlying stuff is agreeing, hey, this is a much improved Dalton Varsho. He is at a career high right now in barrel rate, which is how often you make really good contact with the barrel of the bat, exactly what it sounds like. Career high in average exit velocity, how hard that ball is coming off your bat. Career high in launch angle, so he is putting it in the air a little bit more. Even if his pull percentage isn't necessarily as high, he is getting that ball in the air better than he ever has. And his hard hit percentage, which, again, pretty straightforward, how often you hitting the ball really, really hard, those are all at career high marks. So the underlying here is, yeah, not only are these leaving the park, but even if that cools off a little bit, there is enough here to be confident that, hey, even if, you know, what is this WRC plus right now, 148, 150 or something like that, that might come down a little bit. But there are a lot of good indicators here beyond just he got on a heater for power.
Yeah, he does get on heaters. Like, his time in Arizona was known for that. Like, he'd have a hot month where he'd hit 8 or 9 home runs. And even last year, even though it was mostly a down year for him, he had, I think it was in June, where he kind of tinkered a bit and got on a roll. So he's got the type of swing where he will run into things for a couple of weeks. And I really don't think you need for him, like, you don't need him to be a 360 on base guy or 145. If with all the other stuff, if he gets hot every few times a year, like, he'll be very productive.
And this is this is sometimes the value of a power hitter is, like, yes, you would love for 30 home runs over the course of the season to be doled out equally. One every 5 games or so, you know, in good spots, 3-run home runs. But when a guy gets hot, especially when the rest of the lineup isn't really going, like, I don't want to say Dalton Varsho has won them a bunch of games lately because the pitching staff has, you know, allowed them to win low-scoring games. But you look at that home run last night. You look at the home run on Saturday. Those are games where a Dalton Varsho swing fundamentally and dramatically changed a game. So there are a couple of times over this 9-game stretch where Dalton Varsho has significantly improved your chances of winning. A power hitter who is hot and cold, those hot streaks can win you some games. And again, we'd prefer consistency, but there's nothing wrong with, you know, especially right now when there are some other guys in this lineup we'll talk about later in the show who are not getting it done. To have a guy who is kind of outlier hot right now has been super helpful.
I just think baseball's a game where it's very rare where you've got everyone hitting, right? And we collectively as fans and as Blue Jays social media, like, you love to get upset when guys aren't hitting, but it's like, on any given week and any given month, at least a handful of guys aren't going to be swinging well. And this is what this sport is. It's about different guys carrying you, different guys contributing and leading you to wins. And I think that's one of the strengths of this roster and of this team, is that you've got different guys who can take over for a week or for a couple of games. The pitching staff can take over for a week or two. So they've got a variety of different ways to win. And Varsho, he is good enough, and the bat has enough oomph that he can carry the team for a week at a time or 2 weeks at a time.
So one another indicator that Dalton Varsho is feeling very good at the plate is he is at by far a career low chase rate. So how often are you swinging at pitches outside of the zone? He's trimmed that so far this year to only 21.5%. I know that swinging at 20% of the pitches outside of the zone sounds bad still, but that's in the upper end of the league. That would put him among the league leaders in laying off the bad stuff. He's still going to swing and miss a lot. That's the nature of his swing. That's the nature of, you know, kind of looking for power a lot of the time. But when you see a number like that, that the chase rate is down and the results are coming, we can see that, you know, whether we, there is a Baseball Prospectus, a guy named Robert Orr has a stat called Seager there, which is just cleverly named after Corey Seager, but it's about how selectively aggressive are you? Are you jumping on the right pitches in the zone? Are you laying off the stuff outside of the zone? You know, if there's two strikes, you got to protect the edge a little bit more than if there's, if you're in a 2-0 count, et cetera. His numbers are really, really strong there after being bottom 10 in all of baseball last year in those kind of swing decisions. And when are you choosing to be aggressive? How confident are you that that can continue as well? Because obviously the next part of this conversation is going to be, well, how are pitchers going to adjust to him now?
Yeah, I think he's shown he can hit mistakes again, which he wasn't doing at the start of the year. He was hitting, you know, the pitch that Marcus Stroman threw him was a two-seamer. He was trying to run on the inside corner. It ran too far over the plate. He hit the mistake, and that's what you need to do. And I thought, as Joe Siddall talked about yesterday, as Buck Martinez talked about yesterday, like, it wasn't surprising that when he got on this hot streak, we saw Singer throw him a whole bunch of spin and throw him a whole bunch of breaking balls, and he got to one. So the best part is, like, you can have weaknesses, but again, if you just capitalize on one mistake every once in a while, like, you'll do your job. So it's not baseball. He has holes in his swing, as we established. Like, there are ways to get him out. He's always going to be, I think, you know, optimistically a 320, 330 on base guy, something like that. But again, we'll take that. And as a fan, you'll take that knowing that the defense is so good. If he runs into 30 every year, he's a four-win player, and we'll all sign off on that at the end of the season.
I want to circle back to that thought in a second, but you mentioned Singer went at him with spin, right? That was only his second hit off a breaking ball so far this year. And part of that is, you know, part of the book on Dalton Varsho, as you laid out last year, you know, whether it was actually accurate to what we were seeing when we dove in further was, well, he can't hit the high velocity. So that's what a lot of people came at him with. And to start this year, fastball usage around baseball is down, but Varsho was actually seeing the same amount, maybe even a few more fastballs relative to the league, only seeing 30% breaking balls. He had not hit well on those until yesterday, swinging and missing 34% of his swings against breaking balls. He is destroying fastballs in the early going here. So is that kind of the next thing you're going to look for? More guys? Obviously, Singer's got to locate that slider a little bit. It's got to come off the plate as it's breaking in at him. But would you expect that to be a little bit more of the game plan for the next couple pitchers who see Dalton Varsho?
Yeah, when you go back to what I was talking about earlier, like, I understand that fastballs in were effective against him last year, but it doesn't make sense that those should be able to get him out, like, going forward. It never made sense. I think it was a weird outlier of a year. So I think, again, because of the bat speed, because he wants to pull, he should be a guy who hits fastballs very well. So I do think he'll see a healthy dose of off-speed going forward now that the book is out, and it's kind of like, hey, the rest of the league's going to realize, okay, this whole in or hard in isn't a hole anymore. So I think going forward, he's going to be dealing with a lot of breaking balls, a lot of cutters, and even you'll start to see changeups and stuff like that a lot as well.
So you mentioned, you know, it's not going to take a lot at the plate for him to be, say, a four-win player. If we look back at his 2022, Fangraphs had him at 4.4 wins above replacement, and he had a 302 on base percentage yep. that year. Some of this is, yeah, the offensive environment around baseball is just not very high right now. So what sounds like a bad OBP, well, I mean, 302 is a bad OBP regardless,
yeah.
But you can still be a productive player like that. Right now he has a 316 on base percentage. So that 154 WRC plus, we mentioned WRC plus, the stat that kind of takes everything going on offensively, adjusts for park and situation and things like that, tries to put everyone on the same scale. So he's been about a hitter and a half so far this year. He's already been worth 1.2 wins above replacement this year. Now that'll normalize a little bit, but what is the bar for you where you know, Dalton Varsho is a no question everyday player and a very, very valuable one, because we've seen him again a year where he had a 302 OBP, and yes, he hit 27 home runs, but his OPS was only 745 that year, and he was a four and a half win player because the defense, because the base running is just so strong. Like, what is an offensive line you'd be like, boom, take it, because the defense is just so good beyond that?
Exactly what it is right now. Even if the WRC,
yeah, I mean, right now his OPS is almost 900.
Yeah, we'd all take that. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like, even career, as long as he normalizes to what he was prior to last year, that's a very productive player. That's what,
725-ish.
Yeah, and I think there is more upside there for sure. But you know, the defense is so good, and it's been like the opportunities have come in the last. Not only is he hitting home runs, like, the opportunities have come a lot in the last couple weeks for him to show off that value defensively. And he's been so good. He's been getting to everything. And it's just, this is where when I veer off into the stuff that isn't measurable, I'm always like, well, this isn't what people want me for. But it's like, it really is. It just seems like he's a little more calm, a little more like, I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm supposed to do. And I think he's just executing. He's comfortable. He's comfortable with the guys around him. He's not trying to prove himself, I don't think. So the value of what Varsho brings to the table is finally coming through.
Had a good conversation with Dan Shulman about this last week, about just, you know, the weight being off as well. And like, and no, as I understand it, players don't care who they got traded for, but you got brought in as a big addition and there's a lot of pressure on the team and you struggled out of the gate. Maybe you wear that a little bit in a way that he's free from now. Gary Varsho, his father, is going to be on Blair and Barker today at 3 p.m. So we can maybe get into a little bit more of what Dalton's thought process has been like, as well as the swing changes as well, at 3 o'clock on Blair and Barker later. Varsho, by the way, has moved back into first for outs above average and fielding run value already early this year. So if you ever wondered how quickly defensive statistics normalize, well, Dalton Varsho's back in first and Marcus Semien's in second. So I'd say they normalize about 25 games in here. Let's pivot a little bit. We're gonna save the second segment of today's show to talk about Vlad, because you know, you were tweeting yesterday, you think it's been a little maybe overly negative about Vlad. Maybe there are some underlying indicators. Stop me if we've done this segment before. So we'll save that for the second segment. Something else I wanted to pick your brain on from last night, and really from the start of the season, not to go negative at a time when the Jays have won 9 of their last 13, but at the top of the order, George Springer has not looked like a guy who is the George Springer we know. And there were signs of that last year. His ability to catch up to fastballs was starting to tick away a little bit. It looks like that's the case again early on here. Our Statcast data is not, you know, it's not gospel yet, but the bat speed's down again. Tom Tango, Tango Tiger on Twitter, had a great study today that showed kind of the hitter and pitcher aging curves that we have from these new Statcast data. And they show, you know, hey, if you're a hitter, you've got your nice bat speed going along. For those listening on the radio, I'm drawing a graph on TV right now. You have your nice bat speed going along. And then around age 31, it starts to decline. And then at age 33, it's not coming back. You have fallen off the bat speed cliff. George Springer, right around that age. What do you see him with George Springer at the plate right now?
Exactly what that graph showed. Even though
so
it's
well drawn.
Even though it's not about George Springer, we started to notice it last year. And he even, before the year ended, it seemed like, and this is just us looking from afar, it seemed like his strategy at the plate changed, that he wanted to become. His swing decisions got really good up at the top of the order, and they've been really good this year too. Like, his chase rate's really good. He's really, really looks like he's really trying to take an extra half second, not even a half second, when we're talking fraction.
Half a millisecond,
yeah. Exactly, like an extra fraction of a second, but to make extra really good swing decisions, with the offshoot of that being, it's a lot of opposite field stuff. It's not as much power. It's not as much home runs, and that might not be a cognizant thing he's doing. That just might be an adjustment to the bat speed going down a little bit. But he's a really smart hitter. He's a good hitter. It does seem like the power's gone down a bit and the capability for damage has gone down a bit. That doesn't mean, I still think he's probably their best option at leadoff. I don't think like a Bo moving up there is a great option. I don't think you move Varsho up. I think you leave him exactly where he is, 5, 6, 7, wherever. So I don't think you're changing the order anytime soon. But, yeah, like I just think this is a continuation of what we saw last season with Springer.
So with Springer, you mentioned the capability to do damage. There's a stat called damage rate, which takes our exit velocity and launch angle and the direction you hit it in and things like that and looks and is like, okay, basically it's like, hey, 120 miles an hour on the ground right at the shortstop is not a particularly useful hit ball. We got to look at all these things together and see what could do damage. His damage rate is about half of what it was last year. And last year was, of course, already a down year for him. So I guess my question that would flow from that, this is a guy who has always taken a lot of walks. His walk rate's strong early on. He's, you know, early in his career, he's a high strikeout guy. But for a power hitter, he's never been like a super high strikeout guy. He's not striking out here early on. Is there a path to George Springer becoming a different type of hitter at this stage in his career and being more effective with it than we've seen so far this year? Like he's hitting under 200, and some of that is like balls aren't dropping in or whatever. But if he's going to shift into a different style of George Springer and stay atop the order, it probably has to be like a fundamentally different George Springer than we've seen in the past, right?
Yeah, I think he's been challenged. I think pitchers have already, the league has already adjusted to what he's been trying to do. And the way they've adjusted is they're throwing him a ton of inside fastballs, at least more than the rest of the team. So if the way we see Vladdy and Bo get challenged are those breaking balls away, George is so disciplined at laying off those pitches that they're busting him inside. So I think the adjustment that might need to come is, you know, he's going to have to try and ambush a couple of those, and maybe that changes how often teams are going in on him there. So it will, you know, I think he was such a good hitter when he was younger that I don't think he needed to sit on any particular pitch. I think his bat speed was good enough that he could just react to what was thrown to him. And whether that was an inside fastball or whether somebody, he was always really good and still is at, if somebody throws a breaking ball that kind of pops up, a curveball in particular, he's really good at reacting to those as well. But I think now, as the bat speed naturally declines, he's got to maybe sit on pitches a little bit more, try and ambush a fastball on the inside corner. And again, that might make him, it's all a give and take, right? There's no hitter, there's maybe a handful of guys in the league who can cover off every single pitch. And they tend to be 6'8", 280 pounds, and even Aaron Judge can't cover everything. But like, you need to make decisions up there about what you want to cover, whether that's an inside fastball, sit on a breaking ball away, something. So I think he's got to start making some decisions and giving up some certain pitches or certain locations.
You mentioned, you know, Bo and Vlad get more of the breaking stuff outside. Before we take a break and do the Vlad conversation on the other side, Bo Bichette comes up in a bases loaded situation last night. He gets a 2-2 slider that's just on the edge, and he manages to take it to right center field for a triple. Bo not off to the best of starts here. He had some comments after last night's game, you know, taking accountability for that, knowing he hasn't been very good. It was in the context of dapping up Varsho for kind of carrying them at a time when him and Vlad haven't had it going. What does a swing like that on a pitch like that tell you about, or just does it affirm your confidence that Bo is, I mean, that swing's so beautiful, he's gonna figure it out.
Yeah, Bo's an awesome hitter. The swing that told me the most in that at-bat was there's a fastball either right before or maybe a couple pitches before, 93 center cut, and he was late on it. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, he's sitting breaking ball or sitting soft, at least. Not sitting soft, I shouldn't say. With two strikes, you're not really sitting on anything, but like he was timed up for spins. So I actually thought that was a pretty bad mistake by the Royals to throw a breaking ball in that scenario, because he was all over that. Like you said, the location of that pitch was perfect, and Bo was all over it. Yeah. Like that wasn't like a... That wasn't a poke to right or off balance. He was on time and he drove it. This is not quantitative. This is not when Bo has that little flip, and again, we're on the radio, but when he kind of wraps that bat around his head, that he's feeling good about something. Like that was the pitch he was expecting. It usually happens when he hits a breaking ball. Like he's timed up for that. And it's again, you've mentioned the golf stuff. Like, that's when he's releasing the bat. Like, he's on time, he feels good. And, like, that's what the second I saw that swing, I was like, oh, yeah, he was looking for that, and he drove it.
And to your point, the sequence there goes, so he's 1-1, and he's early on the sinker that comes in kind of center cut, a little on the inside, and then he gets another version of that slider that's just a little off the plate, and he spits at it. And with two strikes, you know, it ended up pretty outside, but it looked like it might stay in there, and he was like, he knew right away he was on top of that, and then got one that he could reach and did some damage with it. So fun one to see. I find Brady Singer to be a fascinating pitcher anyway, like interesting this year, a guy who has succeeded off a 92 mile an hour sinker, and a guy who, I mentioned this on Blue Jay Central last night, he's 6'5" and has this huge extension down the mound, but he has one of the lowest release points in baseball. Normally we see those big guys with the big extension spinning the ball up in the zone, so you get that kind of fastball rising in at you, and he uses it instead to just get the ball to the bottom of the zone in a hurry. So I was very fascinated to see how the Jays would adjust to that. It turns out it was the slider that did all the damage, the Varsho home run and the Bo triple there. He also had some issues locating a little bit. But Singer, it'll be interesting to see, you know, young-ish guy who doesn't have elite stuff, how he now adjusts that he's facing lineups that aren't the Chicago White Sox with Kevin Pillar hitting cleanup. We'll see how...
No Pillar slander while I'm on. No Pillar slander.
I mean, even the biggest Kevin Pillar fan could say he probably shouldn't be hitting cleanup in any year, but 2024.
Hey, he's in the show catching a salary, so that's all.
Yeah, hey, look, the defense is still good too. No arguments here. Just probably shouldn't be hitting... Paul. Here, would you prefer if I said a lineup that had Paul DeJong hitting sixth?
Yes.
Okay, we'll
any
say...
Any DeJong slander you want.
We'll say that instead. We'll also take a break. On the other side, we'll talk about Vlad's start to the season. And yeah, if we're running back the, hey, why aren't the actual stats catching up to the expected stats given how Vlad is putting the ball in play? That's next. Chris Black will stay with us as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Those Toronto Blue Jays broadcast that you'll be watching against the Los Angeles Dodgers this weekend if you're not down at the park, which that's a hot ticket. We are giving away tickets to that on Blair Barker later, so you can tune in for that as well if you didn't get your tickets already. Chris Black, also king of the Blue Jays Twitter threads, at Down to Black on Twitter. You teased one last night. You did not thread it, but you teased that we were going to talk about it today. You have some minor griping with the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. discourse early on here.
No, I just find it fascinating. How long have we been doing this? This is year three. We talk about him more than any other guy, right?
He's supposed to be the best player on the team, so
it's... Best hitter, for sure, yeah. Right? Like, he should be, coming off 2021. But it's just, what I find interesting are all the different reasons that people tend to complain about his performance and whether or not those reasons are rooted in fact.
Some are.
Some are less so. Like, that's the thing. Like, what stands out to me is, like, I can't remember what I wrote exactly, but I was like, I don't fully understand, like, what it is that makes people gripe about him so much. And, like, to me, it's absolutely valid to be like, he was so good in 2021. We just want to see that again. And if that's, like, your comment, then, like, yes, absolutely correct. Like, he was amazing in 21. If the comment is because, you know, we talked about Varsho in the first half hour, because Varsho brings so much in defense and base running, he doesn't need much offense to be valuable. Because Vladdy's playing first base, DH, base running's not great, he needs to be 30% better than league average as a hitter to be productive, right? Like, so if that's your comment, again, I tip the cap, you're absolutely right. But it's those frequently, if I've learned anything from reading the replies, those aren't the comments that get lobbed his way. And so I do think the discourse is somewhat unfair towards him.
And I think that that's a fair way to set it up is, look, Vlad has monster expectations because of the 2021 he had, because there have been discussions of, oh, what would a 10-year, $300 million contract look like back in the winter of 2022 or whatever. And because, honestly, it has felt for years and will continue to feel this way because where he hits in the lineup and because how good he can be, that this team's offense is going to go at least a little bit the way Vlad goes. He has the potential to be the most impactful hitter in that lineup. And when that's not there, it's really frustrating for people. And certainly a 230 average to start here, a 718 OPS to start the season. It does feel a little bit like we're back where we were last year and talking about some of this stuff. And last year was, you know, even a step down from his 2022. So I think the other element of this is, it is a young player that everyone got very, very excited about. And we tend to, whether accurate or not, think that development is going to be at least partially linear, where in your younger years, you'll continue to get a little bit better and a little bit better. And in Vlad's case, while he did just turn 25, so he's still on the younger side, since 2021, it is kind of, some things have gone in the other direction. So let's look under the hood a little bit. He's hitting 230, obviously not great. The hope, you know, the hit tool has always been such that you hoped, hey, when the power slumps, this guy could just like hit 280 and still have some value that way. That's not there. However, something you pointed out, he's walking a ton at like a career high rate. What are you seeing in the walk rate? What are you seeing underneath it? Are you seeing better process side stuff?
The process has almost always been good for him. So that's the first place. Like, one of the most common complaints was he's always chasing pitches out of the zone or breakers out of the zone. And the facts don't back that up. A, he walks a bunch. B, his chase rate's not high. His strikeout to walk ratio has always been among the league leaders, especially when you compare him to other power hitters. So, like, the swing decision stuff isn't real.
And that one is, again, to not to play devil's advocate, but to explain where that is coming from probably, is there's a psychological effect here, a primacy effect, where those stand out so much more than the one just off the plate that you take. When you do expand the zone, when you do swing, I mentioned earlier with Varsho, his chase rate is down to 21%. Swinging at pitches outside the zone 21% of the time sounds like a lot, but it is not actually relative to baseball. So I understand that one too, that, you know, you can be incorrect because when it's a breaking ball a foot outside the zone and you chase it and you know right away that you chased it, it's bad. It stands out so much more than a good take or a good swing decision. So again, this is why these conversations are helpful, to zoom out and see what the macro actually says. But I do understand the in the moment frustration of, man, that's a bad one to whiff at.
100%. And like, the other part that I find interesting is like, why he's not the only guy that does that. No. But people, they tend to lock in on his. And, you know, the other one that came up was, and we talked about it, how good that one season was. But like, the other like fiction is he's only had one good season. And that's not true. He's had one transcendent season, one of the best seasons of the last, you know, two decades or whatever. So like, but if you look at kind of his, where he's at right now in terms of his Blue Jays career, he's one of the five or six best hitters in franchise history right now. Like, obviously if he stayed longer, he got older, like that, those numbers would go down, but he's like 30% better than average as a hitter when you take into account his whole career, right? So it's like the list of names that he's around, like John Olerud, 130 OPS plus career, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And he's a really good hitter. And obviously 2021's doing a lot of work there. I get that. But even in the years that haven't been up to that standard, he's still above average. And again, he needs to be above average because of the other factors we talked about. But it's not nearly as bad as most fans, I think, would allow.
So right now his OPS plus is sitting at 118, which is the same as it was last year. It obviously needs to be higher than that. He needs to be on this leaderboard that has a John Olerud and a Jose Bautista and names like that around there. Again, because of the defensive component and base running component, but also just because this Blue Jays team needs Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to be at minimum 2022 version of him, where that OPS plus was up around 135. Where, you know, it wasn't 2021, but he still hit 32 bombs. He drove in almost 100 runs. This team does need him to be that. So another thing that you pointed out, and this is one where I am going to play devil's advocate just a tiny bit on. You pointed out he's been one of the unluckiest hitters in baseball. And fans have heard this before. We've talked about it on the show before. We can look at things like exit velocity, launch angle, so where you hit the ball, how hard you hit the ball, things like that, and say, well, this is what should have happened. This is what we would expect to happen if we played these hits out 10,000 times. And Vlad has, his actual stats have underperformed that. And one way to phrase that is he's been unlucky. Another way to phrase that is this is a couple seasons in a row it's happened, and maybe there's maybe there's something we're not capturing yet. Whether it's the spin rate that gets put on a ball, whether it's, you know, we need something like damage rate that takes all these things and puts them together. What are you seeing in the batted ball stuff earlier on?
One thing that stands out, and this is the frequent response to that, is people say all that exit velo is coming on the ground, that he just hits a ton of ground balls, and that's why his exit velo stuff is otherworldly. But that's not true. Like, you can measure exit velo just on line drives and fly balls, mm-hmm. and he leads the team, and he's among the league leaders. His ground ball rate since the start of last season is exactly the same as Bo Bichette's. He doesn't hit any more ground balls than Bo Bichette does at a higher rate. They're the exact same in terms of how often they put on the ground. So I do think last year there was some element of like, what's going on with the way he's hitting the ball. This year, I do feel like there is some bad luck tied in that he's hit line drives. I've just gone right to people. And I just, the comparison to Bo is what interests me when I keep looking at his numbers, even since that 2021 season, the numbers are up on TV, like they're virtually identical hitters. But what's interesting is that when people talk about Bo, it's, oh, this guy's going to hit every single year. And this guy, you can count on him. And with Vladdy, it's, why isn't he doing more? And again, that's just expectations. Vladdy has hit a higher ceiling than Bo, but so they are so similar in terms of the ground ball rate, in terms of the overall production, that the discourse around the two I find really fascinating.
Yeah, and some of that's going to be, hey, shortstop and base running value, yep. and things like that. And we can nitpick, you know, some of Bo's, you know, the caught stealing the other day, or, hey, is his defense at shortstop average? Is it a little above? Is it a little below? But, you know, he's higher on the defensive spectrum there. There's a question here from Jordan in Saskatoon, who it's something I wanted to bring up anyway. So thank you for the question, Jordan. What has made Vladdy's batting average, specifically on fastballs, drop over 80 points since 2021? Is it approach or mechanics? I will caveat this by saying his batting average against fastballs that year was 366. So it was never going to stay that high. He's at 300 on them this year, 292 in 2022. But it did dip down a little bit last year. When you dig into these things more, do you see a fastball, breaking ball, off speed specific challenge for Vlad?
Not that I haven't dove in like crazy yet on that this year. He was otherworldly. Not like you mentioned batting average. Like I think the slug
664 slugging off of fastballs in 2020.
Yeah, that's insane. Like he was the best hitter in the league that year.
Who
like,
didn't pitch.
Yeah, exactly. Like he was amazing. So, and that ties into all this, but Joe Siddle would tell you there's some mechanical stuff. Mm-hmm. He's been all over that the last little bit, but I think Vladdy, the part about 2021 that gets missed, the common discourse with Vladdy is the minor league parks and all that stuff. I thought that got too much credit for his success that year. I think the other part about 2021 was he came into that season in the quote unquote best shape of his life. He was in awesome shape. He was strong and he was pounding the ball. Like that's the part about the ballparks that never made sense to me, is because he was hitting home runs that were clearing fences by 50 feet.
He was hitting Aurelvis Martinez home runs.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. That's a deep cut. But like and he's come into this year in really good shape as well. And his sprint speed this year is at its best that's ever been. So like he's in good shape. I really think he's going to normalize to the question is what's normal for him now? Like, is it a 130 OPS plus or WRC? I don't know, but I think he's more likely to be around that those numbers than whatever he's at 115 now.
So that's a question JD Bunkus posed it to me before the season. And hey, what are some of these metrics these projection systems see? And basically the average outcome was like some of these projection systems, like a Pacoda at Baseball Prospectus, like a Zips at Fangraphs, they were all like, yeah, his baseline projection is who he was in 2022. So there is still the 2021 upside. None of the projection systems are like, he's going to get back to hitting 48 home runs. But they were all like, yeah, 2022, totally reasonable baseline where, you know, that OPS is up a little north of 800.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, I think people would take. Also, if you OPS 800 in 2024, your OPS plus is like 200 because
yeah.
The league is no hitting like a $1.50 right now. So within the Vlad thing, I did want to push back on two small notes that I found in terms of, hey, the underlying stuff is good or he's been a little unfortunate. So I mentioned earlier, there's a stat called damage rate from Robert Ora Baseball Prospectus, which again, this is the Vlad stat, because so often over the years when we've done these, we've gotten texts or tweets in that's like, hey, what does exit velocity matter if it's on the ground or if it's right at or whatever? And so this damage rate tries to account for the direction that you hit the ball, how high you hit in the air, and how hard, all in each one. And his damage rate over the last 4 years has gone from 31% to 27% to 23% to 21% now. So a four-year moderate decline, but from being one of the most heavy damage guys in the league to being a moderate damage guy now. There's also, you mentioned the bat speed, and that's probably the first thing I look at to Jordan's question about fastballs. The bat speed is still really, really strong. Mm-hmm. It's near the top of the league. However, I pulled the top 100 guys in bat speed. There is only one player, and it's Kyle Higashioka, who is in that top 100 for bat speed and approaches the ball at a lower attack angle. And I wonder, this is maybe more of a Siddle Barker question that we can tag them in on in a future discussion if this continues. But to me, that says something mechanically. I got to talk to the swing mechanics guys to dig in a little bit further. But what does that bring to mind for you?
Attack angle stuff to me is how deep you're catching the ball relative to the plate. Mm-hmm. And the later you catch it, the lower your attack angle is going to be. A guy like Justin Turner, Davis Schneider, Brandon Belt, they like to catch it out front when their swing's on the way up. So their attack angle will be higher because they want to live out front of the plate. Mm-hmm. So their chase rate and stuff like that will also be bad because you're trying to catch stuff out front.
You got to make the decision sooner.
Yeah, you got to make the decision sooner. So Vladdy, I think he wants to he's catching fastballs a little deeper, which makes that attack angle lower, right? So again, this is kind of, we talked a little bit about it earlier, like with Springer, like maybe Vladdy's got to look to catch fastballs out front a bit more. Maybe, and again, does that lessen some of the swing decision stuff? Maybe, I don't know. But like, so I think when I see attack angle stuff low, I view it as he's catching fastballs deep. And that might or might not be the case. I think we're going to start getting public data on stuff like that soon.
Yeah, I was digging around in the data. I don't know if I'm supposed to know where to find yet.
It's not there yet, but hopefully soon. But yeah, I view that as because he can drive that. And that's like, you know, that's something we all like to criticize about, like, hey, pull the ball more. But like all the best hitters do that. Aaron Judge catches fastballs deep. And Juan Soto catches fastballs deep.
I was down at the park last week and Vlad was doing a pregame drill with part of the plate blocked off. And look, it's not about the attack angle. It's not about catching it deep necessarily, but it's to try to get that swing so he's hitting it between left center field and right center field. Like that's the part of the field he wants to use. The harder to get him out there, but that is the way he wants his swing working. When he's on, he feels like he's going gap to gap.
Yeah, pull home runs will happen not by accident, but just they'll happen almost coincidentally to when his approach is good. And we've heard Joe say it, we've heard Buck say it, like he's at his best when his swing is leading most balls to right center.
Final note on Vlad that I think you wanted to point out, at least he's been good in the clutch too.
Yeah, that's the other thing that like people love to say, he doesn't come through in the clutch. And it's just the numbers do not back it up. And this comes back to like we have selective memories with this stuff. And even like on a personal basis, like we all remember failures, our own failures more than we remember successes. And I think that happens as a fan of sports. And we remember when these guys don't succeed, but these numbers for Vladdy last 2 years in late and close situations, he's the best on the team in OPS. So it's like, people can say whatever they want about what bugs them. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily not true. It probably does really bug them when he strikes out in the clutch. But the numbers just don't back up. And overall, the numbers don't back up the most common criticisms of Vladdy's performance.
And I think, I hope it comes off in this conversation that this isn't thumbing the nose at those opinions. We're trying to understand and appreciate those, but dig into what is actually the issue with Vlad and what is not the issue with Vlad. So, for example, you know, late and close, he's OPSing 900 over the last couple seasons. Maybe that's not something we want to focus our energy on. We want to focus it on that damage rate, that attack angle that is maybe not getting the ball in the air where it needs to go as often. Let's pivot off of Vlad, or you got one more Vlad
for me? I have one question for you. I'll be quick.
It's okay.
Do you see any parallels between Vladdy's time in Toronto right now over the last 3-4 years and flashback 20 years ago to Vince Carter's time with the Raptors?
Yeah. I mean, I can see it. You come out of the gate and you're so amazing and expectations are so high. And Vince settles in as like a really good player who's going to make some all-star games, but not a number one guy.
And also like a complicated relationship with the fan base.
Yeah,
too.
For different reasons.
For different reasons.
But yeah, we'll see if Vlad comes out and says, I'm going to stop hitting home runs.
Don't do that.
I know the I'm not dunking anymore thing is overblown, but I mean, I could see it. You just like when you are a sensation so young, expectations are so high, and everyone not only wants you to be at that level for a long time, but they expect even more on top of that. And that's fair. That's the weight that comes with being a superstar. And in Vince's case, eventually getting paid like a superstar. Vlad will probably get paid like a superstar at some point. You know, that's what the money's for, Don Draper. But it's not, things don't always progress in that fashion.
And when I thought about that, those parallels, I was like, well, you know what? I was one of those people who was pretty unfair towards Vince probably back then when I was younger and a little more passionate as a fan. But like, it's interesting. I see a lot of parallels between those two guys.
Yeah, we'll see when he's playing for Brooklyn, New Jersey rather, sorry, at that time. Quickly, we got about 3 minutes left here. Kevin Gausman going tonight. We saw the velo back up. Last time around, I pulled some numbers. There's not a great correlation between what his fastball velocity is and the effectiveness of his fastball, but I would imagine the fastball velocity and how the splitter plays off of it is a pretty important thing. What are you seeing with Kevin Gausman? What are you looking for tonight?
Were you just looking at numbers this season or in past seasons as
just
well?
Just all over.
Okay, so
just pure fastball velocity versus his fastball run value in those games.
Yeah, there wasn't I see when you look at, if you like just chop up all of his fastballs that he's ever thrown as a Blue Jay, like his, if he's below 94, the effect, and this sounds obvious, but like the effectiveness of those fastballs goes down dramatically. So to me, he's a perfect example of why velocity does matter. Mm-hmm. And he can command really well, but he's always been a unique guy in terms of, I think hitters take an extra beat to try and figure out, is it a fastball, is it a splitter? And so when that velo is good, when he's humming 96, 97,
you don't have
98,
time.
You don't have time to make those decisions. Where if he's 93, all of a sudden that decision becomes a tick easier. And I think that's what we saw first couple starts. So if he's, when he's right, I do not worry about him in the least because he is such a great pitcher, because he can command so well. When the velo is down, like I worry a little bit about, because he's only got those two weapons. Like,
yeah, and this is, you know, it makes him an interesting study right now. It makes him an interesting study opposite Chris Bassett, who has one of the widest fastball velocity ranges in all of baseball. He will toy with his velocity more than most starters, but also at a time when we're talking about pitcher injuries and questioning things like, hey, could pitchers take a little off their fastball, you know, get a couple extra pitches, you know, save their injury risk, et cetera. And Chris Bassett has spoken openly about this. Justin Verlander as well is, well, you don't have the opportunity to do that anymore. Hitters are too good, and the competition among pitchers is too strong that if you can throw 97, the incentives of the sport are that you throw 97 every time. So with Gausman, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem like it's a thing where, oh, I'm going to take something off my fastball today. It seems like a how do I feel today velocity thing.
Yeah, like you saw two starts ago against Colorado, he barely threw his fastball. So it was like 33%. He even started mixing in that slider, which is always an iffy proposition for him. So It seems simple to say, keep an eye on that radar gun, but that's what I'm going to be doing tonight.
All right. It's Kevin Gausman against Michael Wacha. It's 7:40 on Sportsnet. Dan Buck and Arden on the call. Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the radio side. Chris Black, you will not be producing. You'll be producing Dodgers on the weekend. Thanks for taking the time out this morning.
Anytime. Always love it.
Chris Black, at Down to Black on Twitter. Thank you for taking the time out. Thanks to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the camera as well. I'm on Blair and Barker today, 2 to 4. We got Dan Schulman, Gary Varsho, and Tim Kirkjian. So it should be a fun show there. You can catch 2 hours more of me. Jays Talk Plus will be back in this spot, 11 a.m. tomorrow, breaking down game 2 of Jays Royals.